This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Robert Wintner, also known as Snorkel Bob, executive director of the Snorkel Bob Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to reef defense. Robert has been an activist defending marine species and habitat, especially the reefs of Hawaii, and serves on the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society Board of Directors. He has authored several books, including In a Sweet Magnolia Time, which was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, Some Fishes I Have Known, and two new books published in 2012, Neptune Speaks and Flame Angels, a novel of Oceana. He is also the owner of Snorkel Bob Outfitter Shops throughout Hawaii. Robert Wintner is here today to discuss the environmental impact of the aquarium trade and to tell us about efforts to reduce and eliminate pet wildlife trafficking. Welcome, Robert.
Hello, Diane. Aloha. It's good to be here.
Why have you chosen to focus on the aquarium trade as a threat to reef habitat?
Mainly because it's very active here in Hawaii. Hawaii is the third largest supplier of aquarium reef species to the United States. It's huge volume. It's depleting our reefs. I'm near and dear to these reefs. These reefs have been very good to me, and now these reefs need a helping hand. Beyond that, the aquarium trade, unlike most destructive behaviors affecting any natural resource, the aquarium trade has gotten away with murder for a long time because it's underwater, and for most people, that's under the radar. Most people have no clue of what's going on. I present these thoughts on a regular basis to what I'm fairly confident are well-informed people, people above average intelligence. And the common reaction is, they what? They can't believe it. And so that's pretty much the objective of the campaign right now, is to inform and elucidate on these issues with stats and facts.
How much impact does the aquarium collection trade have compared to other stresses to the coral reef, such as climate change and pollution from runoff?
It's very difficult to establish a comparison, but when you talk about acidification, climate change, and the aquarium trade, it really varies from one place to the next. I was in French Polynesia about a month ago where they had two events. One was a natural event, which was a typhoon, and most coral reefs are shallow. The typhoon did quite a bit of destruction, knocking the coral apart. That is a natural event. Typhoons do not affect water quality. The other event was a function of climate change. 2 degrees centigrade is the equivalent of, I think, 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Climate change is not what I call a natural event. It is human-induced. Car exhaust times many billions. That 2 degrees centigrade warming of the ocean water there, it triggered an effusion of crown of thorns starfish. For aeons, crown of thorns lived happily, and they're a pretty exotic species to discover, at 40 feet or deeper. Now, with warm water, they are exploding by the thousands and thousands in shallow water, picking every coral polyp in their path. And so, it's a problem. Do they allow aquarium collecting in Tahiti? No. So, comparatively, it's of lesser impact there. In Hawaii, Hawaii is more isolated from the delivery system that delivers warmer waters. Most ocean currents are peripheral around the Pacific Ocean. Hawaii is centrally located, so it's fairly isolated, relatively isolated from the effects of climate change. But we have a very aggressive, egregious aquarium trade here that's taking millions of fish from our reefs and really upsetting the balance.
How many fish are being taken each year from the reefs in Hawaii?
Nobody knows. The reported catch is something like a million fish. We think it's more like 5 or 6 million. The state agency that estimates these things estimates that poaching accounts for 2 to 5 times the reported catch. Now, these guys don't want to report their catch because they're going to have to pay tax on the fish that they report, and sometimes they're just lazy and they're not required to do it, so why do it?
Which types of fish are most likely to be captured for the aquarium trade in Hawaii?
far and away, the majority of the catch are herbivores, mostly surgeon fish. They're called surgeon fish because they have very sharp scalpels between the tail and the body that they use for defense. Keep in mind that herbivores are just that. They graze algae all day, and many reefs in Hawaii are susceptible to algae overload. Probably two-thirds of the aquarium take are herbivores, mostly yellow tangs. It's a fish that's in high demand because of its brilliant yellow color. It looks almost lit from within. And I could go on the reasons this should not happen. Primarily among those reasons is that yellow tangs live on average less than a year in captivity. On the reef, their natural lifespan can be upwards of 40 years. And it's just a vital species to reef balance and reef health.
How does removal for the aquarium trade affect reef ecosystems? Would you elaborate?
Sure. If you ever watch a yellow tang on the reef, you'll see that it pecks little specks of algae from the coral. And each peck doesn't seem like it could amount to much. When you add up millions of little pecks by millions of little fish all across Hawaii every day, and those fish are leaving, it leaves those reefs susceptible. Another example is an iconic fish called the Hawaiian cleaner wrasse. He's a very popular fish because he's technically profiled as charismatic. He literally has a smile on his face. He's yellow, purple, black, blue, iridescent, and he swims around. The cleaner wrasses set up cleaning stations, and fish of many species will congregate there. It's like a peace area. No predatory activity occurs there, and they wait in line like cars at a car wash to get groomed. The cleaner wrasses literally pick parasites from the skin, gills, and teeth of other fish. Last week, we saw a very unusual thing. It was a barracuda who looked to be about 7 feet long. Now, they don't get that big, but he was huge. He was very healthy. You could tell by his girth and his musculature. He was hovering about a foot off the coral in a marine preserve with his mouth open wide, so his choppers were very prominent. And swimming among his choppers were a couple little cleaner wrasses picking the goobers out of his teeth. Without these cleaner wrasses, many reefs, especially in the hub of the aquarium trade in West Hawaii, many reefs are reporting parasite loading. And these fish are known to die in 30 days of captivity. And still, they ship out no regulation, no control, no care for anything but making a few dollars. They generally leave $4 in Hawaii. They retail online for $55. So you can understand why people react in a very negative, emotional way.
Would you say more about how the collection of reef fish has affected the fish population level?
I can just give one illustration of that. The Kona Coast, for years, was known as the Gold Coast. 20 years ago, when the waves would come and break on the shoreline, as the waves crested, they were gold, literally gold, like gold nuggets, and they were yellow tangs. That doesn't happen anymore. So what's happening to the populations? You know, again, I don't know how much in-depth we have time for here. I'll just give you one more example. Many species of butterfly fish. The state of Hawaii is now corrupt in its management of the aquarium trade. I will say that this is a bipartisan corruption. We had a Republican governor who had a wholesaler, an aquarium trade wholesaler, as her chief policy advisor. Now we have a Democratic governor who has an aquarium collector as his natural resources director. And this guy has strong ties to the trade, and he has for years orchestrated aquarium trade entrenchment in Hawaii. And it goes on and on. Now they have a rules package that's going to be, they're going to have a kangaroo hearing next week to let the public ventilate on the rules package. The public will scream bloody murder, and then the rules package will pass. The rules package allows continuing take of several butterfly fish species on Kona Coast. This is after they've already classified these fish as, and they do this, everything they do is euphemistic, species of concern. They're gone in some areas, gone. But it's okay to take more if they can find them. They took the forceps butterfly and longnose butterfly. I think it was something like 14,000 fish annually. Now, 14,000 doesn't sound like many fish in the ocean, but when you think of these spectacular, colorful fish that are real gems, and each one represents a memory for each tourist who sees it, 14,000 is huge. I've never seen a total of 14,000 butterfly fish. Now, the aquarium trade take, they say, and they're proud of this, it's down to 3,000. That's not because of a limit. It's because they can't find anymore, and they aim to take every last one of every species they can. And the reason is, the fewer fish that remain, the higher the price. It's really, you know, crawling to the bottom, and that's what's happening.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Robert Wintner, Executive Director of the Snorkel Bob Foundation. Our topic is the environmental impacts of the aquarium trade and efforts to reduce and or eliminate pet wildlife trafficking. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. To what extent is biodiversity threatened by the aquarium trade? What are some examples of endemic fish species in Hawaii, ones that are found nowhere else?
The Hawaiian cleaner wrasse that I talked about just a minute ago is endemic to Hawaii, found nowhere else. And I guess the most dramatic examples tend to be the ones that fetch the obscene prices. We have a couple of species. There's another butterfly species called a blue line butterfly. There's a classification that goes beyond endemic. Endemic means it's found nowhere else in the world. Then there's another classification called a relic species. The blue line butterfly is a relic species. That means there's no species anywhere else in the world that's even similar. Here's the kicker, Diane. These species are not protected or regulated for extraction in any way. And in some reefs, on two major sections of the Kona Coast, another classic euphemism that the Natural Resource Department likes to use is they are experiencing a 100% decline. That means in plain English, they're gone. They took them all. Another one they use, 100% decline, is the pyramid butterfly. But another example would be bandit angelfish. They're called bandit because they have a black mask. And they used to be fairly common, but they sell online for $800 or $900 each. And now they're extremely rare. There's no management, no limit, no protection, nothing on bandit angelfish. There's another book you didn't mention, Every Fish Tells a Story. And I mean that literally. Every species has anecdotal background on its importance to the system and how it's been depleted. Again, the state of Hawaii uses this euphemistic term, species of concern. That means look out. They're on the way down, and it's a dramatic decline. And that works in diametric opposition to market demand. As they decline, price goes up, demand goes up, and, you know, the president of the Republic of Palau, his name was Remen Gasau, and he used the phrase, the insatiable Asian appetite. The Republic of Palau banned the aquarium trade because they were taking everything. And when, you know, a species is on the verge of extinction, the price will skyrocket, and it's considered an honor in many Asian countries to eat or own the very last of a species. It's a sad situation. Call it human nature. Call it whatever you need to call it. We aim to discourage that from happening.
Well, you've been referring to the fact that the reef fish are not adequately protected, but what protections are currently in place for reef fish?
I would say next to none. You know, most of the reefs we're talking about here are near shore. Now, the aquarium collectors in Hawaii have gone deeper and deeper as they wipe out the shallower depths. So now they're, you know, down to 80 feet. I think a fellow caught last year, besides the bandit angelfish, there's another one called the masked angelfish. Guy died last year catching those, I think at 300 feet. He was on a rebreather, but he did it wrong and he died. But he had, the week before, this is what motivated him, he caught a pair of fish that he sold to a Tokyo hobbyist for $30,000. That's one mated pair for 30 grand. And, you know, there are no protections for those things. I would say right now, of the shallow reefs that we are concerned about, what we call nearshore reefs in Hawaii, 2% are protected, and 98% are plundered. Of the 2% protected, if you'll allow me another anecdote, the fellow who is the president of the Kona Aquarium, whatever it's called, I call it the Aquarium Scourge, was at a public meeting last year, and I wasn't there, so he was feeling bold, and he, in a loud voice, exclaimed, "Snorkel Bob is an eco-terrorist," and that's because I put so much pressure on those guys. And my response was that, you know, I do send some incendiary emails, but eco-terrorists might be stretching it. This same guy got caught collecting fish for his aquarium business on the reefs of the last working fishing village in Hawaii. That's in South Kona. It's called Mililii. The fellow who caught him is Willie Kaupiko. He's one of the village elders there. Saw the boat, and on the Kona coast, they have a system called FRA, a fish replenishment area. It's a cookie cutter approach to 140 miles of uninterrupted coral cover and alternating plunder zones with no-take areas. But the plunder zones are two-thirds of the coast, and the no-takes are one-third. Mililii was a no-take area, and Willie Kaupiko caught this guy there, and the guy came up blubbering, honest mistake, no foul, no harm, I won't come back. And Willie Kaupiko made note of it, and like a typical practitioner of aloha, went about his business. 2 weeks later, Willie Kaupiko caught this guy there again. So when I say 2% of all Hawaii nearshore reefs are protected, it's often a meaningless protection. These guys will go wherever they need to go to get anything within reach. And I know I sound extreme and desperate in my pleading for something, and that's because this is an extreme and desperate situation.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Robert Wintner, Executive Director of the Snorkel Bob Foundation. Our topic is the environmental impacts of the aquarium trade and efforts to reduce and or eliminate pet wildlife trafficking. Would you like now to speak about some of the efforts that have been made over the last few years to try to have more protection for the reefs in Hawaii?
Yeah, we've approached this on three different levels. We've looked at the situation in terms of supply side, and for our purposes here, that's the state of Hawaii. And on the supply side, we've had several years of legislative campaigns, and we've done better or worse in any given year. But in every year we've done it, we've awakened thousands of people to what's going on here, even people who live here. They can have a view of the ocean, and this can be going on below the surface, and they didn't know it. Now they know it. There was a research poll taken by a pretty well-known company here showing that 67% of the people want the trade banned. I personally think that poll was not accurate. I think it's like 95%. And my theory was borne out by a political poll done by the same outfit that showed one candidate 18 points ahead, and in fact he lost by 30 points. So that's why I think that poll was skewed. But the legislative efforts have really done a lot to wake people up in Hawaii. The other two levels besides supply side are, of course, the demand side. That's the hobbyists themselves. Some of the hobbyists have been blithely oblivious to the effects their hobby has on reefs. Some of them have been really hard-headed about it. It's my money, and if I buy the fish and he dies, it's none of your business. But it is our business. If someone comes into your neighborhood with a net and starts taking songbirds, you may well want to stop that. And that's what we're doing here. So we're trying to associate the aquarium hobby with all things unsavory. That's demand side. The third side are the middlemen, the retailers, the resellers and retailers. The iconic villain on that level is Petco. I would encourage everyone to stop buying anything at Petco. No pet supplies whatsoever. I've talked with these people many times. They have pledged to do everything right, and they will do nothing right. And I would say most recently, we've made great strides forward in three national outfits. joining the campaign to stop the aquarium trade. One is the Humane Society of the United States and its associate outfit, Humane Society International. They were instrumental in stopping the import of large exotic birds, and this is ostensibly the same thing. The second group would be Sea Shepherd. As you know, I just became a member of the board of directors, and Sea Shepherd really welcomed this union in a very significant way, and they are huge. I've been associated with Sea Shepherd for many, many years. Sea Shepherd is a global movement, and people there care, and they do want to respond to guidance, and so I think this union will be significant in providing that guidance. And then the third major effort and group to get behind this is the nonprofit law firm called Earth Justice. They're headquartered in San Francisco. They have a very strong office in Honolulu, and they have recently agreed to take this on, and they have sued the state of Hawaii. This is in the last month, sued the state of Hawaii for failure to assess environmental impact prior to issuing aquarium collecting permits. They want to trigger implementation of HEPA. Now, we all know what EPA is, Environmental Protection Act. An Environmental Protection Act calls for environmental impact statements. HEPA is the Hawaii state equivalent. It's the Hawaii Environmental Protection Act. And besides an environmental impact statement, it also requires a cultural impact statement. That would be the Hawaiian culture. And anecdotal evidence like the president of the Kona Aquarium scourge getting caught twice for poaching in Mililii is prima facie, Your Honor. So we feel like we're making pretty good progress. And I will just add to that that anybody who's been to Hawaii knows that the fire goddess is Madam Pele. And we have a thing here called Pele's Curse, and it's protective. Anybody who takes a pebble from the beach or a piece of lava rock or a little plastic bag of sand will attract Pele's Curse. It's not pretty. It's severe. Now, how does Madam Pele feel about losing her most colorful, playful children to a commercial conversion to chump change? And that's where we are.
In your view, what should be the outcome of all these efforts? What is the goal?
To ban the aquarium trade.
Do you think there is any way of regulating it that would still be adequate?
No. There are NGOs now all over. I think the Nature Conservancy is one. And they are in cahoots with the aquarium trade because NGOs need money. And the aquarium trade spends money hugely to support these groups who will promote the idea of sustainable trade. There is no sustainable trade. It's tantamount to saying, could we actually have a sustainable trade of Burmese pythons as pets in Florida? It's the exact same thing. Wildlife is not good for pets. Full stop. It's the same thing as the aquarium trade introduced the lionfish to the Atlantic seaboard. There are no natural predators to lionfish in the Atlantic, and now they're exploding, and they're voracious. And for a while, everybody blamed the lionfish. The lionfish didn't choose to be there. They got too big. They were too aggressive for home tanks. People released them. Now they're all over the eastern seaboard and the Caribbean, and they're a threat. It's the same thing as saying, can we have a regulated trade in primates from Indonesia? Because the little orangutans are so cute. No, it can't happen. Could we have a regulated trade in colorful birds from South America? I don't think so. This is wildlife, full stop. But, you know, this idea of sustainable trade, the correct definition of sustainable is it's an acceptable level of destruction. How much of this bad behavior can we allow without killing whatever's alive here? It's really a ruse. It's a cover. Another example would be the trade's pledge to sell captive breeding only. Petco is particularly guilty of this. Petco has the chutzpah to say 98% of the fish that we sell are captive bred. It's not accurate. If you go to the Petco marine aquarium inventory, you'll see 250 species. Two of them are captive bred. So all these things that you think make sense and, oh, it's so reasonable, this is what they grab at, reason and compromise. It just won't work because there is a difference between right and wrong, and what they do is wrong. Wildlife does not qualify as pets under any circumstance, full stop. And it's not right for any species, any animal. Is it nice to keep a tiger in a cage in your yard? Well, I don't think so. And, you know, people are now opening their eyes to gill breeders who they don't normally see in their daily lives.
What can listeners do to support the Fish of Hawaii's Reefs?
Oh, I would say a couple things. Most obvious would be buy Neptune Speaks. If you go to snorkelbob.com and follow the links to Neptune Speaks, you'll see another link on the Neptune Speaks page and what we're doing in the campaign. If you buy the book at Snorkel Bob's, all proceeds, not a portion, but all proceeds apply directly to this campaign. We've also donated many, many copies of both new books, Neptune Speaks and Flame Angels. Flame Angels is a novel, to Sea Shepherd. If you buy the books at seashepherd.org, all proceeds accrue to Sea Shepherd. So those are two big things. And then beyond that, follow what's happening and feel when it's right for you to jump in. At the very least, if you have an aquarium, don't buy any new fish. If you know anybody who has an aquarium, or if you're in an office or a bistro or anywhere, have a word with management that nobody is growing those fish. Those fish are being taken indiscriminately from reefs around the world, especially reefs in Hawaii, and you'd wish that that aquarium be taken down. I always tell the kids, should you make a scene? I'm going to leave that up to you. You know, it depends on how deeply you feel. If you feel deeply about something and it really strikes you as very wrong, then have a solid word with management. Because, you know, it's like the guy said, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
If you'll allow me to change pace, I'd like to leave them with a message of aloha. Anybody who's been on a reef and stared at some fish while sucking air through a plastic tube knows, you know, a fish might not engage you on a first visit. And I've experienced this many, many, many times. If you go back to a reef, familiarity sets in. Some of my best friends now are fish. Maybe that's another reflection of my quirky personality. But I just like to leave our listeners with a feeling of aloha. Please open your hearts to this concept and support us where you can.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Robert.
Thank you, Diane. Aloha. It's good to have people like you who care on board.
You have just been listening to Robert Wintner, Executive Director of the Snorkel Bob Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to reef defense. For more information, check on the web at snorkelbob.com and follow the links through Neptune Speaks. Again, that's snorkelbob.com. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.